hello and welcome to the 44th episode of the Being Brilliant Radio Show. This is your host, Amy Hackett-Jones, happiness and high performance coach and hypnotist for being brilliant in the way you both live and lead your life and those around you. You can find me at www.amyhackett.com. The Being Brilliant Radio Show is a deep and impactful look at what it takes to be brilliant. The show invites you, our listeners, to step into the very essence of who you're being as you show up to life. My guests bring a combination of inspirational teachings covered with practical tools and essential life and leadership skills translated into actionable strategies so that you, our listeners, may step into being the very best version of yourselves. My interviewees are high performers, thought leaders, game changers, pioneers, dreamers, adventurers, wayseers, visionaries, those whom I believe live brilliantly and who travel magically through life, shining their own light so others may do. And of course, today is of no exception. Here on the show, we have Fudia Smart. Hi, Fudia. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And Fudia, I met 2 or 3 months ago at a networking event, and I was bowled over by her presence, by her skill, her knowledge, her wisdom. And so we met up for coffee, and I invited her to be on my show. And so here we are today. And she is a futurist. She's passionate about artificial intelligence and also about the future of employment and employment law. And I can't wait to talk about all of this with her because it's something I know nothing about and she knows a lot about, and I'm here to share all of that wisdom with you. So Fudia says, I'm an employment lawyer, trainer, and people enthusiast who has a keen interest in futurism. From the employment law side, I'm an experienced lawyer who regularly works on contentious and non-contentious matters for both employers and employees. I am passionate about matters ranging from diversity to the impact artificial intelligence and automation will have on employment relationships, which will clearly have legal implications. Yeah. My aim is to demystify employment law for people and to change the nature of the relationship between client and lawyer. This plays a factor in my role as a trainer, as I want to ensure that everyone better understands the current legal framework so that it can be improved for all and better reflect the changing work practices. As to being a people enthusiast, I enjoy MBTI and sadly admit to being a personality test addict, as I enjoy better understanding myself and others around me. It is my belief that most employment law issues stem from miscommunication, and failing to understand and acknowledge that everyone has their preferred way to work. If we can unlock this and improve recruitment processes, perhaps performance dismissals can be a thing of the past, and wouldn't that be amazing? And Fudia was rated in the Legal 500 in 2011 as a star. Fudia is going to be a star. And a bright, shining star she is. So welcome onto the show, Fudia. It's really fantastic to have you here.
Well, thank you so much. And that introduction, hopefully I can record it and use it for everything I do because it was so lovely. So thank you.
Oh, bless you. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Now, I usually get my guests. I've just seen that I have a low battery on my phone, of course, tech issues. I usually ask my guests to share their story, because story for me is just so powerful. And that's where really people can find themselves in some of the struggles and that sort of thing that you might have had over the years to get to where you are today. And so I'd just love you to just go back a few years and look at, you know, what's your journey been? How did you get to where you are today? And then we'll dive into some of the more legal AI and futurism pieces.
Well, I'm a Londoner by birth. So my parents are Sierra Leonean expats, as I like to call them, and they came here many moons ago, and I was created a twinkle in their eye in the late 79 and was born in 1980. And I came from a family that had a very interesting perspective because my parents had come from quite well-to-do families from their respective countries, but that didn't translate in Great Britain. So we had middle-class ideals, but having to have a working-class background, which is one of the things I'm really grateful for. because I think that it's helped me have an ability to communicate with a wide range of people. So I grew up with friends who have a wide range of jobs from a large number of different cultures and backgrounds. And that made me a natural people enthusiast.
Yeah.
So one of my neighbours in the council estate we lived in was an old Jewish lady. And, you know, we had a Filipino family next door, an Irish family here, et cetera, et cetera.
Oh, brilliant.
You know, just always made me very interested in different cultures, different understandings. I'm a nerd by birth. And so I did very well at school. And I came to a point where I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And I was very interested in perhaps doing journalism or politics, but I didn't like the muckier side of things. And I knew that whatever I wanted to do, it had to be people-driven, and I had to feel like I was helping someone.
Yeah.
And employment law, when I studied it as an elective after my university, I went to LSE in Holborn area, and it felt like home because there are so – everybody that you know will have a job – in their lives, or most people have jobs in their lives, whether it be self-employment or employee. And most people will have an issue at some time in their life with regards to their job. So it's a thing that transcends class, race, etc. You have a real broad range of people that you can help. And then I coupled it with an experience I'd had as my first proper job, which was at Safeway in the UK. So that helped me somewhat. And I was accused one Saturday of having stolen money because I'd been on express checkout and they didn't. Without wanting to get too technical, old school tills would have a little chute where you could put the money to go to finance. Mm-hmm. And if you worked on express checkout, they didn't have one of those chutes because small little standalone till. And I was asked where was the money. I couldn't remember where I'd put it. And I was suspended from work. And I was, you know, walked off the premises. And it was a really big impact on me because that inability to feel like I could prove my innocence for those 2 weeks was horrifying. And it all, you know, they found the money. A supervisor had taken the money and put it up a different till. And that's why I didn't know where it was. And it was all sorted out. But it made me very attuned to the feelings people have when it comes to employment issues.
Yes, absolutely.
And I've been doing it now for more years than I care to mention, as I hope I'm young, and I act for both employers and employees.
Yeah.
But I think the thing I try and bring to it is empathy.
Which is so important.
So important. And understanding. Because oftentimes, you know, no one's a saint and no one's a sinner. It's often miscommunication that's at heart.
Amazing. And what an experience for you to sort of live through. And that, what did you feel when you were being marched off?
Oh, I wept like a newborn. And I remember my father came with me to the meetings, the disciplinary investigations. And even when they found the money and they apologised and they gave me some, I think, another week off paid and my dad a bottle of whiskey, it stayed with me, those feelings, those emotions of, you know, there's nothing worse than not being able to prove, being able to prove a negative. How do you prove you didn't do something? And it's something that made me very mindful about how I deal with people in life generally, whereas we are quick to assume the worst, and oftentimes we can draw incorrect conclusions. Sometimes the conclusions are correct, but there's still a right way of doing things, in my view.
Yeah. Wow, what an experience. And, of course, that shapes, like you say, how you treat people now with a sense of empathy and really what they're going through emotionally in difficult situations like that to do with employment or legal issues within employment. Amazing. So then you're now working at Hein Legal.
Yes.
You're a partner at Hein Legal.
I am.
So just tell us a little bit about that, so your journey there.
Yes. So I, as I said before, I studied law at LSE. I trained at a city firm called Fox Williams, which was very well renowned for employment law. And then I moved to a top 100 firm about 2 years qualified called Russell Cook. And I was there for almost 9 years. And the opportunity presented itself to join a boutique, which is Hein Legal, and to get that step up and becoming a partner. And you know, there was a lot of soul searching about making that decision, because my last firm, I was like Cheers, everybody knew my name. I literally had slippers under my desk and I was very comfortable. But I think I started to feel a bit of inertia because I was too comfortable, and I needed to take the risk of pushing myself into a new avenue.
Yeah.
And funnily enough, I resigned the day of the Brexit referendum, having gone to bed saying, oh, it'll be close, but I'm sure, you know, it'll be a Scottish referendum and it will sort itself out. And then I wake up to a whole complete sea change and was very, very worried about, well, the employment law, I mean, 80% of it derives from Europe. So it's been a complete walk in faith and trusting my own ability to take the step up for a new role, because partnership is a different role from being a senior associate. But the focus is on fee generation and client relationships to a far greater extent than it was when you're a senior associate, where you're a good technical, safe pair of hands.
Yeah. Amazing. And so what's the focus at Hein Eagle? What's your sort of your mandate? How are you?
Yes.
We've got, I've just noticed we've got a friend, a German friend of mine on who lives in Richmond and who I train with my cycling and running and swimming. And somebody, Umberto Vilches, has come on from Panama.
So hello.
Hi guys. So yeah, just, you know, what's your main focus within Hein Eagle? What's your thing?
My thing, well, I think my key area is a lot on the social media side, because one of the areas of interest for me, and I know I've listed quite a lot of areas of interest, is the multi-generational approaches to work that we're experiencing. So we have roughly around 3 to 4 different generations in work at present, from the millennials to the baby boomers. And each group has a different way of relating with professional services, wanting to obtain information. And law firms have been traditionally slower than other areas. You know, law is a very traditional area in relaying with people in these new forms. And so I'm Twitter savvy. I know I've not shown that today with my Facebook Live sales, but I'm fairly tech savvy usually. You know, I try and use Instagram as a medium. So I've brought a lot of that with me to the firm. And also my interest in different styles of management. So traditionally law firms have been very hierarchical, and Hein Legal is a firm that does a lot of things in an interesting and novel way, particularly for law firms. So for instance, each member of the team is tested using Talent Dynamics on the onboarding process. So Talent Dynamics is not too dissimilar from Myers-Briggs. I'd call it Myers-Briggs Lite.
Sure.
And it's not done to make a recruitment decision. It's done to ensure that we understand how people like to work, better ensure that people are in flow. And for me, when I was asked to do that, I was blown away, because the synergy there, this isn't, I will sadly admit that I like doing personality tests in my private life, but the fact a new employer was so keen on that as a method really appealed to me. And I think that's, you know, Hein Legal is, there's about to be 10 of us, and it's about doing employment law, but doing it in a relational way.
Fantastic.
And that, Nick Hein, who set up Hein Legal, that's very much his approach. It's about, you know, having a relationship with clients. And people have a very staid view of lawyers and professional services.
Yeah.
Some criticism is fair, some not so fair, but it's something that as a profession we need to start changing. And people need to see us as a trusted advisor, as opposed to every second I speak to you, you're costing me the earth.
And so you're here to wave that flag and say, this is the new wave of legal services. It all starts with Hudia.
We hope so. We hope so.
Absolutely. That shining star is shining bright. So just give me an overview before we delve into AI, and that's the thing which I love, and futurism. I love those conversations. Just give me a bit more of an overview about how you get first let's just backtrack a little bit of an overview of the state of sort of employment in the UK, just a little couple of sentences, nothing much, just to get a bit of context here, And is there a catch-up often? Is there a catch-up after this chat? Yes, there will be, Paul. It will be live, so you can come back and watch it afterwards. That somebody wants, they have to pop off now, but they'll come back later.
Bye, Paul.
Thanks, Paul. So yeah, just a quick overview of the employment, like just where we are on the employment state of the nation, so to speak.
Yeah.
And then where you think it's going, and then I think we'll dovetail that nicely into AI and futurism.
Great, I think, yeah, great questions, as they would normally say. But I think where we are at the moment is where I feel personally that we're a bit of a crossroads, because we've had a lot of the employment laws we have in the UK have been based on laws that we've had since the Victorian era. So if you look at, for example, the test for who is an employee under English law, you have to show three key elements: that somebody has, the employer controls the employee, tells them how, where, when to do things, that the employee has to provide personal service in doing that work. They can't send their mate Amy or their mate Fadir to do a shift for them. And there's this concept called mutuality of obligation, which sounds very complex, but it isn't. What it really is talking about, the employer is under the obligation to give the employee work, and the employer is under the obligation to do that work. And the reason why we're having so many cases about who is or is not an employee is because the technology is testing the boundaries of things that were settled principles previously.
Certainly is.
You know, when I was at Safeway, I had to wear a delightfully multicoloured dress.
Just imagine.
The most unpleasant material ever. And I didn't have choice on what to wear because of my control. When I was working on the till, obviously I would have to do it, and they gave me shifts and I would have to do them. You have technology like Uber, which is one of the biggest ones, but they're not alone. There have been cases against cab companies like Addison Lee or courier companies, whereby the courier companies, the taxi companies, etc., has said these individuals are self-employed. They've got a contract which says they're self-employed. But in fact, they don't have freedom to work for other people. They don't have much freedom in being able to negotiate their rate or how they do things, etc. And these people have sought to argue, well, no, we're in fact employees. And what the courts have mainly saying at the moment is, no, you don't fully satisfy what an employee is, but you fall under this middle category known as worker. And we're having all this discussion about, are these boundaries correct? Do they reflect modern work practices? Mm-hmm. What do we need to be looking at in the future? Yeah. And there's a review by Matthew Taylor of the RSA about modern work practices, and he was suggesting changes to some of these boundaries to better reflect where technology is going. And so that is an area that's of key interest, because depending on what kind of status you have, you'll have different rights under English law. The employees have the greatest rights, such as right not to be unfairly dismissed, right not to be discriminated against, right, you know, pay, holiday pay, etc. And the genuinely self-employed have very few rights. So this matters. So when Uber drivers, I think there's 40,000 in London, are saying, we're not self-employed, we're workers, they're all entitled to holiday pay. And if they haven't been paid any, they'd be entitled to claim up to 2 years' worth of holiday pay. Or if they're not genuinely self-employed, but in fact workers, they'll be entitled to the national minimum wage. And if they've been earning under that, then Uber will have to cough up the money. And that's why these cases are highly political, because you have many, you know, trade unions who are now trying to support these people, saying this is all an example of the way the world of work is now. It's too insecure for people to be able to have mortgages, to live their lives, to feel confident. And then you have businesses who are saying, well, actually, we're innovating, we're creating these new opportunities. We don't want employment law to strangle that.
Yeah.
And the courts are doing their best to kind of, you know, work within the existing framework they have, but really it's going to be for governments to pass legislation to better reflect where the law is now, and also, keenly from my futurism on, where we want the law to go to.
Yes. It is so fascinating just to hear. I mean, the whole Uber thing that's obviously happened recently here in London, just incredible to see what was unfolding.
Yeah.
And to, like you say, that the legal framework is Victorian in some instances.
Yeah.
And, you know, we really need to change with the times, especially with the speeding up of all this technology. I mean, it's certainly not slowing down anytime soon. So that's amazing. It's something that really interests me. So thank you for sharing.
Oh, my pleasure.
But so what,
No, please go ahead.
What do you feel then is, what do you feel needs to be done, for either from the government, from the people who are now classified as workers? What needs to happen moving forwards?
My opinion is that people who are working in these jobs where I'd call it self-employment light, where yes, they may be able to choose when they choose to work or not, but how and where and sometimes even when they do things is quite tightly controlled, for them to have better protection. So if after, I don't know, let's say 6 months or a year, the way that you work is more akin to an employee, to have a right to request to become an employee, or, you know, that workers will have certain other greater protections. So if you've been working in a way, a steady, settled way for a couple of years, to have the right to request to become an employee, or that you must be provided, even if you're considered self-employed, a baseline amount of salary. Because the thing is that, you know, I confess to having almost wept tears of sadness when Uber lost its license, because I use Uber a lot. Whilst I have issues with some of the things, it is helpful. And I don't we want to completely throw the baby out with the bathwater. But equally, I can understand listening to Uber drivers who say if they get lower than a 4-star rating, they don't get jobs, the system kicks them off and they don't get jobs or they don't get this. But that doesn't seem fair to me. So I think it's about redressing the balance so that businesses can make income, they can have ideas about how they want to do things, but that people, are, if they've worked a settled way for a certain period of time, can have the right to either become an employee or have baseline rights such as sick pay, you know, holiday pay, etc., so that they can live. Because, you know, one Uber driver said to me, once they deduct all of their operational costs, they're only really taking home £3 an hour, which in London is not... It's not a lifestyle make.
No, not at all. So whilst technology and these disruption companies, you know, they're disrupting the status quo, whether it's Airbnb or Uber, or even Amazon, that's, you know, just completely disrupted the way we buy. It's, I mean, it's fantastic and it's great and the technology's evolving and it's all incredible. And yet... we need to, you know, catch up, you know, behind the scenes, like the legal status of everything and other parts of employment. And I mean, I'm sure there are so many different levels that we could talk about. So what do you think is the, like the from the government's perspective or the government side of things, what needs to happen? Like what's missing and what needs to happen?
I think the Taylor Review was the first good step, which is having... the outside to give a review, but I think in society we need to have a greater discussion about what we see as being fair work, what we see as being fair remuneration, and what categories we want to have. Because I personally think that some of this discussion will be superseded by how people are choosing to work in the future going forward anyway. Because most people are no longer working a 9-to-5 job. Most people know, you know, when you look at the rates of millennials, and I know people hate using these terms to suggest a whole group of people act a certain way, but they don't want a 9-to-5 job. And so if we're saying that being an employee means your employer tells you how, where and when, we're going to find that a lot less people are actually employees. And going forward, you know, the rate of, they say it's 1 in 10 people who are now listed at being self-employed, and that's been a growth area. So I think that really, maybe we need to, what do we want an employee to mean?
Because a redefinition of that would be great.
Exactly. When we have AI and automation kicking in, so they're saying by 2050 or 2045, AI and automation would be able to do most cognitive skills that humans do better than humans. So analysing data, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes, and this is what you and I began to talk about when we met, so I really want to dive in here.
But my view is that if that's the case, do we not look, you know, is it that we want employees not to work for somebody else? You know, what is the key thing? Because in the Victorian era, you know, lots of jobs were working in a factory, so you can see why they'd want you to have to do the job yourself, want to control how you did it, and that you're obliged to do the work and they're obliged to do it. But this is a wider discussion of what we see the role of work in the 21st century being, because they're saying now jobs require people to be a lot more creative and not just doing some routine jobs. It's thought. So do we even want to have jobs now that pay for output as opposed to input? And what I mean by that is...
Good question.
You know, people get paid by the hour, or, you know, you have to work 9 to 5 and then you get a salary. But if you happen to do blue sky thinking, and I know you will know this, Amy, because your whole job is like this.
Yes.
I can't say to you, Amy, can you come up with some creative thoughts between the hours of 9 to 5, please? I want 7 hours worth of creative thoughts and you get an hour for lunch. It just doesn't work.
No.
And whilst there will be some jobs that will still be like that, this whole discussion of what is it that we are going to be meaning about employment relationship, in a way, I think it's something that society needs to have a discussion about. And I know that's very idealistic and big blue sky thinking, but I don't know if you've read Utopia for Realists, and if not, it's a great book.
No, but sounds amazing.
He talks about a lot of these things about will we have the kind of 7-hour work week or something ridiculously short like that, because it will not be about how many hours you put in, it will be about what value you have brought. And if so, the way that we, all employment contracts at the moment are not fit for purpose because we don't have that kind of expectation in mind. If you work lots of hours, you'll get paid for it. The more hours you work, the more of a bonus you'll get. The less hours you work, you know, you might be disciplined. But that work in routine, kind of more factory-type jobs, or output-driven jobs, but as we're moving to an input-driven society, we almost need to draw everything back and say, okay, what does this new landscape look like?
Yeah.
And I pose the questions purposely because I don't have the answers.
But I love sitting in the question zone, holding them, and like looking at them.
Because I don't, you know, one of the things we're looking at, and, you know, I look at myself, is I'm looking at employment contracts and tearing at the wording and saying, well, how would this work in an environment where there are no working hours? Like where you, and again, one of the biggest issues that underpins employment law, at least in my humble opinion, is the issue of trust. Because a lot of the employment relationship is, you know, you need to be here by this time, so I control how you do things, and people needing to be managed. And if we're going to move into a world where people are all working in an agile fashion, where people are in a lot more control about what their input is, it requires a lot more trust in the relationship between employer and employee. Because unless I'm going to watch you think a thought and say, oh, was that a thought? Was that not a thought? I'm going to have to trust. Is that value to me? Is that not value to me? I'm going to have to trust that you are working in my best interest.
Yeah.
Now, some people will say, well, that is idealism gone mad, and there needs to be metrics upon which to value the fruit that people are giving you. But you can see the kind of existential issues that this raises, that AI raises, that automation raises. If lots of our jobs can be pulled away from us and done by a robot that can do it quicker and more efficiently than us, what's going to be left? The creativity, the interpersonal skills, the what makes us human. And it's very hard to quantify.
Yeah.
Did you emote enough today? When you start looking at it that way, it's going to completely revolutionise the working relationship.
Which I find absolutely incredible. And you're bang on. I mean, it is really all going to be based on relationship, connectedness, collaboration, communication. I mean, that's where we've got to move towards. And again, talking about millennials or even Generation Z. Is that the generation after millennials?
That's the new one.
I have a friend who's come on, Anike, and she's like, yeah, we all need new skills. We need human skills. And it's that human touch, like you said, that a lot of us are missing, especially the younger generation. So it's just so used to being on their phones. They have a lot of social anxiety. They don't know how to interact. They don't know how to strike up conversations with people.
And I just like that comment, Anike. So I hope you saw that little like from me on Facebook. But I totally agree. And one of the things that Matthew Taylor talked about in his Taylor Review is lifelong training.
Yes.
Absolutely. And I'm a big believer in the growth mindset. So I'm constantly trying to learn and improve.
Yeah.
And I think that is the attitude that we need to be training in people. And without wanting to stray outside of my remit, but I think it goes back to education.
Mm-hmm. Because absolutely.
Schools, you know, were helped create healthy workers for a Victorian type of work environment. But if we're going to be moving into, I just saw your comment, Elizabeth. Yes, I'll send the Taylor review for Amy to be able to to send to you all. But if we are moving into a world where creativity, interpersonal skills, resilience, empathy, etc. are going to be key things people need to start doing, then really we need to start at school age to help children. Because, for example, in my career, in my field, lawyers are praised for being analytical, for the very skills that could be very easily done better by a robot. So what I mean by that is a computer will be able to read through tons more cases than I can ever mentally recall or read through and crunch out a response. But they won't be able to say, but I see that what you really want is not to take to litigate, but just want some respect. And maybe you can talk about how you may be best to get that and bring those skills. Yet nowhere in my legal training was it ever a core course about understanding human emotion. You know, I was taught how to read a case, how to write articles, how to defend a case. But often what I find, I have to draw on my ability to understand human need and what people are saying without saying it. And you always pick up those things through years of practice. But I think we need to be more intentional about unlocking those skills in individuals.
I couldn't agree with you more. And exactly what I do with people has helped to unlock a lot of that, and it's that human element, that human interaction that, as you say, we're just not taught at school. And we really need that, really needs to start at grassroots with kids. Like, the whole education system needs a massive shift, and it's almost like it's a generational thing. It's going to take a generation to really shift this and create a generation with a whole new mindset. But we need to start now.
We do, because I think when I spoke to some people now, and they're saying, oh, AI is never going to kick off at the level that people think. And all I would say, and it's almost like a direct quote from the Utopia from Realists, and he said in the 1900s, and I'm not sure when, they asked a group of the most preeminent people in New York what they thought was going to be happening in 100 years. And they all said they didn't think New York would exist because it wouldn't be able to survive under the levels of manure, because obviously a horse was the method of travel at that stage. And the key thing is that we can't envisage now what 7 years is going to be like, what jobs people are going to have. But it's quite clear that when you look at the jobs a lot of my friends are doing, I don't remember at school that being a life coach was ever something that was suggested as a potential career.
It certainly wasn't for me either.
One of my friends is a Tumblr specialist, and I don't even know, that was never something that we had careers discussions about, working on mobile apps as a job, obviously because it didn't exist. And when you think about the massive change that mobile technology's had in what we do, how we shop, to think that we're not on the precipice of a massive revolution in how we work, things keep changing at a pace every year. Yes. And I think that we need to start, you know, one thing that a robot or AI or whatever you want to call it can never do is outhuman us. And it's our humanity is the reason why, you know, my humanity plus the fact that the express checkout in most supermarkets keeps telling me to remove my baggage from the unexpected baggage in the bagging area. But I would normally still like to choose somebody to speak to a human being as opposed to speaking, you know, going to a computer, even if it's quicker.
Yeah. Amazing. So we've got a couple of questions here. Aneke says, are the teachers ready? Yes. And I don't think so. I think we need a revolution in the education system, is what we were just talking about. And Victoria, hi Victoria, says, what are your thoughts on Elon Musk's views of AI?
I'm just quickly reading to make sure I fully understand what Elon Musk's views are on AI.
So we will always need to exercise human judgment in tasks.
Yes, I totally agree with that. I'm not suggesting that AI is going to come and we humans going to be relegated. I mean, I think people always have a view that I'm talking about it being a bit like Wall-E, where the humans are just laying on, you know, beach lounges and computers and robots are doing everything. No, I still would want a human to be involved in something because there are some decisions. And yeah. I've been watching lots of tech about, you know, having these rules in AI to always make sure that they don't start making decisions like Terminator, where they think that we are the worst things ever and to destroy us. And yeah. I think going one step ahead, and it goes back to the analogy I said earlier, which is that the reason why I want to speak to, you know, the reason why I have lots of clients who thank me in my job is not because I only know the law, but because I take time to understand human emotion mm-hmm. and human motivations. And so even in tasks which can be routine, sometimes it's when somebody is able to look at it and say, well, somebody who's pregnant might find it difficult to maneuver a seat like that, so we need to change it to fit that. Or somebody who's elderly might find that difficult, so we need to change that. Those kind of things, you have to be a human to understand mm-hmm. And to bring that to it. I think AI will enhance. It will not remove the human from it. But we would be remiss in thinking there aren't lots of roles that will be changed forever because it will be cheaper and more cost-effective to let it be automated rather than have a human being do it.
Absolutely. I think you would love a book that I started reading. I've only just started getting into it, but it's called Thank You for Being Late.
Ah, which I was today, so I'll take that as a good sign.
I can't remember now who it's by. I sort of had it here in my pile, but Thank You for Being Late by... it's just gone.
I'm looking it up, so we'll see if I get... I've seen it by... Thomas L. Friedman? An Optimist Guide to Thriving in the Age of Acceleration?
Yes, exactly. Thomas L. Friedman. Thank you for being late. I only just started, but the idea behind it is that he's a journalist, he's a writer, and he has a meeting scheduled somewhere in New York, and the guy turns up half an hour late, so he has half an hour. In his high-pressured life and environment, he has half an hour suddenly to himself to actually think, to stop and think, rather than just be on the go the whole time. And so he does, and he has these brilliant ideas and this concept for these new books, about which ended up being this book. Hey, Daniel, hi. And thanks for the love. And what he ended up doing was saying to the guy who eventually turned up half an hour late, the guy says, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. And he's like, no, thank you for being late. In my highly busy this at the other schedule, you've actually given me space for half an hour, and I've come up with these brilliant game-changing ideas. I've come up with a whole new idea for a new book. So he was just like, thank you for giving me that space. And in it, he talks about some of the major changes that are going on, the acceleration of the technology, the acceleration of climate change, whether it's human induced or not, it's happening anyway, etc. So it was just, it's a fascinating book. I've only a little way in, but it's really interesting, and I think you'd love it.
I'm definitely going to check it out. I've put it on my iBook sample so I can check it.
Amazing.
I do think that's one of the, and this is a completely, a little bit of going off tangent, but what I hope that AI and automation will allow is not to remove us humans from decisions, etc., but give us space to think. Mm-hmm. Because I do feel lots of people, and maybe it's just a confession of myself, we are so stretched in a way that our parents have never been stretched. Mm-hmm. With the fact that from the minute you wake up, we are bombarded. I think, again, it's in that utopia for realists. We're bombarded with the level of information that people would read in a year, in a day.
Yes.
And we, you know, as soon as you get your phone, you're looking, the whole world is available to you. And then we wonder why we're stymied in our creativity. But we are just literally dealing with such significant amount of detail and minutiae. And if we can have AI and automation to streamline that, so that we are then left being able to, you know, come with creativity like that, thank you for being late. Mm. Why did he have to, why was it necessary for somebody else to be late for him to have that freedom of thought? Yeah. And I think that's why I don't see AI and automation is the boogie monster. A lot of people think that it's going to come, take lots of jobs, and we're all destroyed. But I think that's a really negative view on our natural ability to innovate and to always continue changing and evolving. Because if you keep looking, you know, when the car came into creation, people thought all the people who drove horses would be unemployed for the rest of their lives. And we see there's always shifts and churns. It's just in this day, as technology keeps abounding and abounding, these shifts are becoming more and more frequent. And, you know, within a generation, these things are impacting people, within a decade.
Absolutely. And Nikki says, I had that today. I waited and started to investigate who I was waiting for. Then I got inspired in making animations for him while waiting. Annika makes amazing animations for people. So there we go. That's an example of it. And it's almost like we need to start building. And this is what I teach all my clients as well, is building that time in their day to create downtime, to create space. Yes. Whether it's, you know, first thing in the morning when you wake up and you just do a meditation or you do some journaling, or whether you go out for a walk and you walk barefoot and you connect to Mother Nature and whatever it is, you know, whatever floats your boat. But it is about creating that space to actually be able to think.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And, you know, for example, we talked about this when we met, and I think because we felt such a synergy for each other, that's why, even though it was a networking event where you speak to a million people, you definitely stood out. Is that I have a mindfulness practice, which I try and do. And it's one of the things I think not everybody will want to meditate in a traditional sense, but I always try and take a lunch break, even 20 minutes just to walk, to allow the creative juices to flow. Whereas when we've been so output driven, people think that sitting there doing long hours will result in, you know, they're doing good work. And we need to start turning that on its head, because you can put lots of hours in and still not produce very good work. I speak from experience. I've done that, you know, spent hours on something, and then you read it back the next day with some fresh perspective and think, well, that wasn't very good, was it?
Absolutely. So I'm not quite sure what time we actually started, how long we've been on for now, but anyway, never mind. I want to ask you now, walking is a great thing. I want to ask you, what would be your top three insights for the listeners here and the watchers on Facebook? What would be your top three tips to take away for them to go and apply some of these things into their lives?
Fine. That's a really good question. And, well, there's three different things depending on what people want to take from this. As an employment lawyer, the biggest issue I see in the workplace is of an interpersonal nature.
Yes.
And if I were to give people advice on that, it would be some of the things I try and live by are ascribing positive intent to people. Because oftentimes when I hear people raising complaints, and I'm not talking about if you're being bullied or harassed, if you're being discriminated against, of course, it's difficult to, you know, offer positive intent towards that. But let's say you feel offended by somebody's review of your work, somebody's comments. I often find it quite helpful to take a step back and say, what could they possibly have meant?
Yes, that's a really great question.
Oftentimes we can be ready to be offended easily. Mm-hmm. And I've heard it said that for ourselves, we are great defenders, and for other people, we're great prosecutors. Yeah. So, you know, we may have a million explanations for why we've done something and not offer that same kind of generosity to somebody else's reason. Two, I would say, when it comes to workplaces, is to foster open communication. And that will not always be possible, but I am definitely a believer that it's better to address issues head on, which I know can be very the not British way, and people are worried about conflict. The longer a situation is allowed to fester, the worse it becomes, truly.
Yeah.
And also, for those in a managerial position, or even for everyone, it's about, we are all responsible for constantly learning and developing, as we've discussed.
Mm-hmm.
So taking training opportunities and taking them not only in hard skills for your jobs, if you're in a financial role, but on the softer skills, the things that we've been talking about, which are going to become more and more important in an AI world. So listening skills, how to give and receive feedback.
Yes, that's so important.
So important. Resilience training.
Yeah.
In the world of work, we have to accept we'll be working with people that we may not naturally have chosen to spend time with, and we might be working in stressful environments and learning how not to take things so to heart.
Sorry, carry on.
Learning how not to take things so to heart, learning when is something constructive and when is something just being spiteful. I think all of those things can really help grease the wheels of what I often find are the pressure points in workplace relationships. On an AI perspective, the first thing would be training.
Yeah.
I see myself as a lifelong student, and I'm very keen on learning. I also seek feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a partner, I've asked more junior members of staff if they feel like get instructions clearly.
There's a really great, I was always taught that the feedback is the food of champions. And one way to make it really easy to give and receive feedback that is really, really simple, you start with an appreciation of the person. So, Fudia, and then I would appreciate you. So, something specific that you've done, not just a general, oh, you're great.
Yeah.
It would be, thank you so much for that document you handed in. It was so detailed and so well written and so poised, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. And then you would say, so you start with an appreciation, then you say, what I'd like you to do more of is ABC, and what I'd like you to do less of is XYZ. And it's such a great, because it makes it, because when we receive feedback, a lot of the time, as you're saying, we're defenders of ourselves, we get defensive,
yeah,
and we're quick to prosecute. And so that simple structure really helps bring that ego down, bring the defensiveness down. You receive an appreciation, you're told what you'd like to do more of, and then, okay, and what you'd like to do less of, it's like, okay, cool, I can handle that.
No, and I totally agree with that, because you know, they talk about the fight or flight response,
mm-hmm.
And yep. The limbic part of our brain, when we hear negative feedback, the prefrontal cortex deals with our thought, and
yeah,
completely goes away. And I do think that, and that's why I think even training on how to give and receive feedback, going back to my earlier three, is so important, because I was listening to a TED talk that said when we have an emotion, it's a physical reaction, and it takes about 90 seconds for it to settle within us.
Mm.
And so within that 90 seconds, if somebody says something that really upsets you, you're going to feel an emotional response to that, and how you decide to respond to that will obviously depend on the emotion that's been elicited. And I think I'm learning to sometimes sit with that discomfort.
Yeah.
And, you know, to avoid the desire to immediately say something or do something, is there meaning I can bring more wisdom to the situation?
Yes, exactly.
And more kindness. And I also think the other thing is, if we now want workers to be more creative, employees need to be encouraging outside time. You know, mm-hmm. Well, you know, my firm, we've been doing lots on well-being, about encouraging people, you know, whether it be agile working, whether it be having moments outdoors, how you fit your workplace with, you know, if you've got very harsh lighting, can you change it to make it more appropriate? So I think employers and employees both need to invest in their well-being,
yeah,
and need to work in concert with each other. Rather than it being solely the preserve of the employer to provide XYZ, employees need to also be inputting into this, you know, and taking some ownership,
yeah,
of their career trajectory and their well-being.
Absolutely. It's creating the balanced whole, isn't it, really? Really looking at what it takes. Okay, and I know we're slightly running out of time, so I just want you to tell me what is being brilliant for you? What are those, because I know we talked about this, your top sort of three things. What is being brilliant?
I think we talked about this before, and I'm probably going to change it now on the slide. But one of the first things that comes to me is being brave.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And what I mean by that is, you know, leaving my last job to join this job took some bravery. It took some courage. And taking feedback, you know, I don't want to keep banging that drum, but it's asking for it is a brave and bold thing. Being authentic is brave.
Yeah.
Because if you bring your authentic self to the workplace and then it's rejected, you can't hide behind that rejection. So I think being brilliant involves being brave for me. I would also say being brilliant involves being present. Mm-hmm. One of the things I'm really trying to work with is being in the now. And despite the futurism, I think it's being important not to... Despite, you know, I don't want to be too far in the focused on what's gone on previously, nor too obsessed with what could happen in the future. I do mm-hmm. think we need to be prepared, but we also need to enjoy the here and now. And that's just generally in life. I mean, whilst you're constantly learning and developing, people can get very frustrated with if they feel they're not getting paid enough, etc. And I'm not saying they aren't sufficient or realistic gripes. But one of the things I'm working on is finding each day something to be grateful for. You know,
yes, trying to that's so huge.
My colleagues, these are all things that I've been working on because it's very easy to be very pessimistic. You know, I'm going to avoid this like a hot potato, but Brexit elicits strong reactions from people and lots of negativity. And, you know, not getting too boiled down in that. And then lastly, what would I say? Being brilliant. I mean, for me, it means being relational.
Yeah.
And I think
that's so important.
With the
things that really sums up what we've been talking about.
Yes, I think I like being a human being, funnily enough. And I like emoting, and you know, I like when a client is able to share with me something upsetting or joyous, and I'm able to share back and reflect and mirror and engage with that person as, you know, on a personal level. And that's what made me want to go into an area which dealt with individuals. And that's what also makes me, those are the days that feel best when a client says, you know what, I really thought you understood me. And thank you for being here. Thank you for listening.
You really got me. Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Rudy. I feel like we could chat for hours.
I know.
And I hope we can do this again sometime.
For sure.
But thank you so much. Where can people find you? What's your website, your link?
Yes, so I positioned myself under the Hein Legal banner, so you can see it almost there. But if you Google Hein Legal and put my name in, Fadia Smart, I can be found there. I also have my own blog post, but please forgive me that I haven't updated it lately, which is fadiasmart.com. And I'm also on Instagram.
Smart with a double T. Fadia, FADIASMART.
Yes, please. Thank you.
Amazing. Well, thank you so very much for listening, everybody.
Again,
this has been such a fun show, and I love that we've been able to do it on Facebook Live. This is a new thing for me as well. So be sure to tune in a couple of weeks from now, and in the meantime, go out there and be your brilliant selves, be the lighthouse, shine your own light, no matter how fierce the storm. Thank you so much, Rudia. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
Bye for now.